This is another episode of Connecting the Dots podcast. I'm Skip Stewart, Vice President and Chief Improvement Officer at Baptist Memorial Healthcare.
Hey everyone, I'm Brad Parsons, Vice President of Market Operations at Baptist.
Hi, I'm Gemma Jones. I'm an improvement coach based in the UK and working with people across the world.
Well, folks, we have a special guest today, someone that has been very kind and a great friend of Baptist for quite some time. We first got introduced at the beginning of the pandemic, and it was such a pleasure to meet someone so kind and so good at what they do. Her name is Jane Adshead Grant, and many of y'all probably already know her based on her work and her books around listening. But today we're going to talk about this thing called Dare to Care. Today is the first of a three-part series around this Dare to Care. But before we jump too quickly into that, Jane, would you tell our listeners a little bit about yourself and your background?
Skip, thank you. Well, it's wonderful to be with you too, Brad and Gemma, and all of our listeners. And so my background is based always in people-centered roles. And over the last few years, I have been working continuously with leaders across different industries, coaches, mentors, and indeed parents in this space of generating and their listening skills more deeply in ways to really nurture those they have the privilege of caring with and for. But the Dare to Care that Skip generously shared with you just then is a project that I began working on post the pandemic. And so alongside my listening work as a leadership and executive coach, I help people become the leader that they're meant to be. I'm a huge ambassador of human-centered leadership, host a human-centered leadership online gathering once a month, and it forms very much part of my executive coaching and leadership work. So this program was unique. It's an offering that I delivered online this year, and it's been fabulous to continue to witness the impact it has.
Jane, thank you for being with us. And we've got plenty of time to really unpack this Dare to Care, but I do want to back up a little bit further. And Skip talked about you being a friend of our organization. So we've got lots of listeners that come from our Baptist organization, and some of which might have heard you. So will you kind of refresh and kind of share with the broader listening audience some of what you did with Baptist during the pandemic?
Well, thank you. Well, the invitation was to join you and talk a little bit more about my work in the field of listening. I imagine a world, Brad, where we listen first. We allow people by listening first to step into and up to who they are meant to be. And my work has been hugely informed by the work of Nancy Klein, who I know you and your listeners may well have been part of, and a wonderful podcast that I listen to as well. So the idea of generative attention in the way that we listen to people, enabling them to free their mind and to feel liberated so that they can tap into their own resourcefulness, positivity, and sense of success for themselves. And so this body of work I was bringing to this group of listeners, but also with my own journey, discovering some five levels of listening, generative listening to being the ultimate, but how do we get there? And certainly in thinking about healthcare professions, where empathetic listening, you know, has been a critical resource for both professionals and also their patients. And also to ensure some of the things that were coming up were around the high degrees of burnout, the high degrees of stress, and also this phenomenon of compassion fatigue, and how listening can be a very useful way for us as leaders, mentors, coaches, those that are supporting people within healthcare, can really help nurture their own sense of well-being through such times.
Yeah, thank you. I think it's really impactful. It was really impactful at the time, but continues to be really impactful. And we talk about, we're an organization that talks a lot about care, compassion, and how we get to that. So I think this conversation, I'm very excited about this series and really appreciate you you joining us on Connecting the Dots.
You're welcome.
Shall we talk a little about your model now, Jane, the CARED Squared model that you were mentioning to us?
Well, thank you, Gemma. Indeed. So where did this come from? Well, this work really began in the pandemic. And, you know, what I was noticing was kind of a reflection of what I had been witnessing even prior to the pandemic. And this was as a result of people coming to me through my coaching sessions with a desire to become more resilient, some sort of feeling a sense of burnout, sort of through this kind of overwhelm of workload, others feeling a sense of stress and anxiety through the complexity and the unknown uncertainty of what was going on in the world. And so I'd spent a good 18 months, 2 years really thinking about what I had learned over the many years of my work as a coach and a leadership facilitator. And my work that had been really inspired by two huge mentors of mine, Nancy Klein, who I referred to, and also Bob Chapman in his work of Truly Human Leadership. And it was these two influences that really helped me step back and think about what had I discovered, what had I developed over the years, and what had I experienced with the leaders that I'd had the privilege of coaching. And with that put together, I designed this framework, CARED Squared. CARED Squared on the basis that it's 10 behaviors with the acronym of CARED, on the basis that it were 9 behaviors that I witnessed my clients were coming to be developed in order for them to feel more courageous, more resilient, more creative, have greater clarity, and have more compassion, both for themselves and others. So there were 9 behaviors, but that didn't kind of fit a model, not in my world anyway. So I put another one on. And what I realized when I look back on it, the last one, which is dignity, is actually what comes as a result of applying all of the other 9 behaviors. We can uphold our dignity when we decide to bring these behaviors that I'll be happy to share with you and the listeners in how do we genuinely and genuinely care for those that we're lucky enough to have under our span of care.
And so we're gonna get into that. Gemma, go ahead.
I just wanted to say, you said there, I really like something that you said about caring for others and for yourself. And I think that's a really lovely nuance to your framework that I don't think we hear that terribly much, you know, when other people talk about leadership. It's all about other people. And yeah, it's about the work you need to do in the way you communicate or lead those people. But we don't necessarily hear about reflecting it back and looking in the mirror and looking after yourself.
Gemma, I love the fact you picked that up. And I didn't, even though when I put this model together, I was thinking it's about how do we demonstrate these behaviors for others. But what was lovely when I ran my pilot was that was one of the key benefits that people said time and time again. This program is enabling me to care for myself because through my micro coaching of this model, I asked them to apply it to themselves as well.
That's really wonderful.
Brad. So we really look forward to unpacking the CARED model, the CARED Squared model a little bit. But you've called it a program. So before we get into specifics, tell us a little bit about the program itself.
Well, thank you. Well, I ran it as an online program earlier this year, and I'm so thrilled. It went sort of for people across the globe. I had 26 people on the program. And, you know, initially I wanted to really get some feedback and how it landed and be something that I'll be giving and delivering, you know, ongoingly. And so the nature of the people for whom this really resonated were people who are really wanting to, as Gemma said, not only have a framework to care for themselves because they want to sustain a sense of resilience, a sense of strength, of mental well-being as well as physical well-being. And also they have a leadership role. So a leadership role, whether it be in education, whether it be in business, whether it be even as a parent. So the program really supports people across multiple industries, but those who have a particular interest in developing themselves as a human being and developing others as human beings.
That's great. So let's unpack this a little bit more. So CARED is the framework. And so where do we start?
So we start with culture. And, you know, I think culture, maybe people will have different definitions of it. And for me, culture simply is how we behave around here. And one of the things I love about the work that you do, Brad, the Baptist, is your whole value set and actually making and bringing that alive. And this is what culture is for me. It is how do we live our values through our behaviors each and every day? So on the program, I invite people, it's a very practical based program. I share a little bit of insight and then get people to think about how they are in response to or in relation to this particular aspect. So when it comes to culture, my invitation is to ask, and for our listeners too, perhaps can do this alongside us right now, is to think about our values. You know, what what is important to you? What do you really care about? And when I invite people to think about this, of course, that kind of work on values can be huge and it can be a multiple and a long exercise. But I think to make it practical is to think about times when you have felt in flow, where you felt really good about the people you were with, the environment you were in, and to notice what's happening around you. And so those are the kind of situations and experiences that help us tap into what's really important. For example, you know, being in an environment where you're respected for your experience, being in an environment where you feel appreciated, not just for what you do, but for who you are. Working with others who encourage you to contribute your thoughts and ideas. Encouragement could be another value. A sense of justice, inequality, ensuring that every voice is heard in the room. Compassion. These are all values that when we know what they are for us, what's truly important, and then we live in accordance with that, we are generating a culture around us for other people to experience who we are, and then to subscribe to that culture if we're in a leadership role, because they can see this consistent behavior that we are showing. So we create, whether we know it or not, we all have a culture around us. And if we're in a leadership role, we have this profound responsibility, I believe, to generate this culture. And of course, the very first culture that we ever experience is our family, the one that we're born into. What about you? What do you think about culture? What is it for you?
Well, thinking about what you just said, Jane, it's so interesting because I think there's the culture of the organization and the values of the organization and the way, you know, depending on the size of the organization. But, you know, at Baptist, we're talking about, what, 24,000 people?
That's right.
So you can have a very big organization with a culture in itself, but then you can also have these smaller ecosystems and cultures within departments and under each, you know, we've got so many leaders spread across the organization. So can we just unpack that a bit in terms of how that cascades down or how they link together? Because you could have, you know, individuals who have got a very different culture around them, like you say. How do they all sort of fit together?
Well, it's a brilliant question, Gemma, and you're spot on, because that's the reality. So when I work in these big corporates, I'll walk into a reception area and see these tombstones of the value proposition. You know, I'll never forget one big investment bank will remain nameless. And I walked into the lift and it had all its values there. And then I walk in to coach my clients. It's not a bit like this, Jane. It's really not. Yeah. So, you know, what sometimes organizations suggest they stand for is not the case. So I think this is where another thing of our profound responsibility as leaders is to align, and hence working in an organization where we feel aligned so we can be our best, is to align to that corporate message of values. And if not, let's get together as a board and or an executive and talk through what the values, what do we truly want to be known for and representative on how we behave in this organization. And then I think it's absolutely true in my own experience when I was working corporate for an investment bank. The values, the culture rather on the sixth floor, the executive floor, was incredibly different from the operational floor on the second. I used to love going down to the second floor. It was much more informal. People spoke about their weekends. People kind of got to know each other as human beings, not just as the roles they did. But when we got to the executive floor, people were terrified to speak, literally, because the chief executive, you would know his mood by the way he walked onto that floor from the lift to his corner office. So it's a difficult question to, or it's a great question, but I think it's work that happens all of the time to be aware of how we generate the culture because of the behaviors that we demonstrate that come from the values. So understanding what's important to us and our values is a critical part of leadership. And we can help demonstrate our care for our team members by behaving in these ways that are attuned to our values.
Jane, you mentioned the word awareness, and really for leaders, sometimes it's hard to pause long enough to really realize you're in these spaces, or to always be kind of evaluating, is this a space where, you know, I feel like I'm respected, appreciated, I feel like I'm in flow for the work that needs to be done. And sometimes I think in healthcare specifically, we get so wrapped up in the busyness all around us. And I think that's true of lots of industries today, maybe more so than ever. So, and again, I know you've spoke to some of your mentors and the people that I just think of Nancy Klein's work of time to think and time to pause. And how do you coach leaders to really be aware of those times? And they might even be fleeting. So how do you capture that awareness, Jane? How do you coach people in that?
I think it's a lovely question, and I think it's the reality. And I think this is where it's so important to give ourselves permission to just name it by normalizing it. I think for me, one of the big signs is an indicator when things are not going well. It's too late, isn't it? You know, a team member has just called in sick or they feel burned out. Another team member has just, you know, revealed their sense of this compassion fatigue that we spoke about. You know, the high levels of absenteeism, and we look at the cost base and see the huge expense of people, you know, taking sick days. That can be a big awakening for a leader. You know, data can give us big insights. So any leader that has access to human data about their team members, I would encourage, take a look at that. What's happening in your team? For those who have the privilege of coaching, my clients say this is the one and only time, Jane, that I get to really think well for myself and the space to really generate what I want to do for the rest of this week, this month, or whatever. And so I acknowledge the challenge. And my invitation for leaders is to boundary some of your work, you know, put in some boundaries, develop a habit at the beginning of every day or the end of every evening to take that moment to pause, a moment of reflection. You know, what do I stand for today? How will I live my values today through the behaviors? And then at the end of the day, or at the end of the day, you know, what worked well today? Where did I show up in consistency with my values today? And, you know, I know that's a big ask when you're juggling, you know, multiple projects and meetings across different functions, across different sites. My invitation, though, it's worth it, because the biggest question I'd ask is, what is the impact of your leadership on the lives that you're entrusted with?
Yeah, and I really like the three practical terms you use there: boundary, habit, reflection. All things we talk about habits a lot. We talk about reflection. And I think for leaders to understand the value that they can bring to their team by just pausing just a minute, creating some boundary or some time for yourself to be able to create habits and reflection on how am I connecting back. I think that's great advice.
I think one last thing I'd love to share with you just to wrap up this piece around culture is to help leaders understand why would I take time to just notice this, to your point about the reflection, is to think about the impact of us knowing the culture that we are generating, whether it's subconsciously or hopefully now more consciously through this conversation, is how a culture can build psychological safety, how it can support team cohesion. When people understand the values that make this team and the way we work together, that will help us perform better. And also clarity. You know, one of the things that causes this stress, anxiety, burnout is lack of clarity. Now, I know it is difficult to get clear, always clarity, but to give a sense of that can really help. So when people know what we stand for as leaders, that does also provide this sense of clarity and consistency that team members will really benefit from.
Very good. So there's another, though, C that we want to unpack today. What's that, Jane?
Well, it will be no surprise to you or your listeners that I am going to use this part of communication to illustrate, or rather to highlight, that, of course, there are two parts to communication. Well, at least two parts, but the two that we most identify with are we have a speaker and we have a listener. And of course, there's lots of training and writing and publications and workshops that you can go on to become a better speaker in your communication, whether it's as a leader or as an individual. But not so much in the sphere of listening, although I have to say I'm thrilled to see that there is so much more coming about now, which is wonderful. And so I want to hone in on the art of listening as being a part or one of your most resourceful skills as a leader. And I'm so appreciative of this audience listening today around some of the challenges I have. Is Jane, I don't have time to listen. I mean, in terms of the listening that you're talking about, I mean, I'll listen for a couple of seconds and then off, you know. And so what I want to offer here is that, or my invitation is that it's worth deepening our skills of listening. And there are different levels of listening. You know, there's a listening that it begins with our self-listening, as in listening with a compassionate mindset. And to be a good listener for others, I think, requires us to be a good listener. And what that means is taking that pause, reflecting on ourselves. What's working well? What might I learn today? You know, what was a challenging step that I hadn't taken I'd like to take? What am I celebrating today? So there are some questions that we can ask ourselves to resource ourselves. So beginning to listen with compassion rather than in competition for ourselves is a great way to start. I think we can then move on to listening to others. So listening to others in the way that I love to invite people to do is to, you know, we listen to the facts. And again, in our profession, sort of medical profession, there is going to be a key part of any conversation where we are listening to the facts. And that's essential to make a decision, to discern a treatment, to discern, is this a coaching moment, a mentoring or a collaboration moment? Then we have empathetic listening. Now, this is critical, of course, with our patient care and is certainly moving towards patient-centered medical service and support. And empathetic listening, of course, is building on the facts to notice the unspoken word and how the person is, their body language, if you like, the non-verbal communication. And then moving to generative listening. And so for me, generative listening is distinct. It's distinct because it serves the individual, the patient, the client, the child, the team member. It serves them in thinking for themselves. Generative listening is a way of listening that enables people to flourish, enables people to consider for themselves as themselves, what might be a way forward, what might be a solution to this, how might I develop my own mind, how might I expand my thinking on this. And so a listening generatively means listening free from interruption and free from judgment. And I think that people want more than anything in the world today to be seen, to be heard, and to be understood. And generative listening is a way that we can do that for people. And it shows how much we care. What are your thoughts?
I really want to say here, Jane, that, you know that on this podcast, we interviewed Nancy Klein a while ago, and I've had her books on my shelf, you know, for a few years. I've been a real big fan. But I've been so lucky in the last few months that I've been able to actually practice Nancy's techniques of time to think with Skip. So he and I have been practicing with each other and actually listening. And, you know, I thought I was a good listener beforehand. I've been a coach for a few years and I thought I was, you know, pretty good at that. But it's been really transformative for me. And I remember one of the things that Nancy talked about was, you know, what your face is saying whilst you're listening. And the difference that can make. And that's made me really notice other people, whether I'm working with coaches or with leaders, you know, just getting them to think. Because earlier on, you mentioned behaviors a lot. And I think, you know, what's on our face is part of our behavior. And whilst we're listening, I think it can make such a difference to how that other person is able to think, you know, whilst we're listening or not listening. You know, our face is telling a story. And I just, it's had a really profound effect on me and my coaching. And I really do think that can make such a big difference. I think it's easy to say, yeah, I'm a good listener. I listen all the time. I'm pretty sure that 90% of people are maybe not listening as well as they could be.
Well, thank you for sharing that. And I'm so thrilled that it's had that impact on you, because it did on my life, Gemma, when I first was introduced to this body of work, the thinking environment, and particularly generative listening. As a coach, I'd learned many other forms of listening as the ones I shared, but this was different. And it sounds like you've had a point where you've continued to have a similar experience. And I think this piece about the face is critical, because we say that we're going to listen to you free of judgment. And this, again, builds trust very quickly. And when we think about working in organizations, we think about your organization with 25,000 people working across different locations. And imagine for a patient, you know, incredible.
How do you know when you're generative, when you're listening generatively? I mean, how can a leader kind of, we talked about reflection earlier, the ability to kind of pause and know, how do you know when you're listening well?
Oh, beautiful. Well, there are lots of ways that we can do that. In my work that I did on this podcast previously, I gave the framework of EARS, and this would be four ways to recognize easy, succinctly, and to remember for yourself. So EARS stands for E being eye contact. So giving your eye contact, to Gemma's point about the face, it's a soft eye gaze, not a critical. I'm looking at you now and I've got my eyebrow listening into us. You know, what does your face say? Is it that encourages? And a soft eye gaze says to that person, I'm giving you my attention. And the eyes, giving our attention through our eyes, giving soft eye contact, will also say, I'm interested in you and what you go on to say. This generative listening is about listening to what they say and go on to say rather than listening to reply. Mm-hmm. We are listening to generate their thinking more than we are trying to fix or give them a solution. So the first E is that the E is for eye contact, a soft eye contact and removing all distractions, giving our attention. The A is for asking open questions. And when we're truly listening to another, it's a skill in itself. Well, it'll come onto one of our components. So asking open-ended questions, those that do not require a yes or no answer, will help people think better than just a simple yes or no. The R stands for resist the urge to interrupt. And finally, the S, silence. I was running a group this morning, one of my alumni groups, and one of the colleagues said, actually, what you've helped remind me of, Jane, is the power of silence in their practice, the 5 minutes each way. He said, I just need to do this even more. So silence can act as the real crucible. You know, silence can be the breakthrough. It can do the heavy lifting. So get comfortable with silence is another way to help us really nurture and deepen our generative listening.
Jane, I think you did that so beautifully, because even a few moments of silence on this podcast, and we all kind of wanted to jump in, but I didn't, because you were just going through your acronym. So that would have been inappropriate. But no, I think that's great. And that's a great model to help folks think about how they listen and to improve their listening skills. Well, and so one other thing, I'm very excited that we have two more episodes with you to continue to talk about this model. But I want people to be able to begin to reach out and look at this model. So how could listeners that are faithful listeners to Connecting the Dots, how do they find this Dare to Care model?
Well, have a look at my website, thelisteningcoach.co.uk, and there is the Dare to Care program on there. But I would also say just be in touch, you know, because whilst I run these programs, I'll put a date out for the new year. I'm also really interested and would love to offer it to a small cohort. So if a group of people got together and said, you know what, I'd love to experience this online, because I do it online, so it becomes available to people around the world. Let's just do it. Let's make it happen. So reach out to me individually, but also check out my website, thelisteningcoach.co.uk.
Well, Jane, this has been fantastic. Thank you so much. I'm really thrilled that we've got you at least two more times. Maybe even more, but this has been fantastic. And I say it with a warm heart on behalf of Baptist Memorial Healthcare. Thank you so much for spending some time with us. And I'm actually pretty eager. I wish our next episode was already starting, but thank you so much for spending time with us. And on behalf of Baptist Memorial Healthcare, we greatly appreciate you and your leadership.
You're very welcome. It's been lovely. And thank you, Brad and Gemma, for inspiring me with your questions and insights. It's been fun.